Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a nice weekend. The Carolina Panthers did not, losing their game to the Minnesota Vikings yesterday. The Charlotte concerns, however, were the topic of most of the media focus over the weekend. They announced that the curfew was no longer in force as of yesterday, and fans were able to get into and out of the stadium. There was, there were a few incidents of people being challenged by protesters about going into the Bank of America Stadium and leaving. But for the most part, the police did a very good job of allowing people and helping them to get inside to the Bank of America Stadium and also to exit peaceably. So, what matters in North Carolina, sports-wise, Duke and Carolina both with outstanding wins over the weekend, last-second heroics, and the Carolina Hurricanes start their preseason schedule tonight. So, all of that aside, the goings-on in Charlotte have really dominated the news, and interestingly enough, there was a change of heart by the mayor, the police chief, everyone involved. They went ahead and released the body and dash cam video footage. And lo and behold, what did we see? We saw that Mr. Scott had an ankle holster. We also saw that he had what clearly looked to be a gun in his hand. And so our producer, Matt Calder, as you know, is the NC Gun Dad, a host of that program, and told me that there's a difference between open carry and brandishing. And so apparently Mr. Scott was brandishing when you're holding a gun out like that. And so apparently the police admonished him to put the gun down 11 times. He did not do so. And the rest is history. We do know that there is a history of folks from out of state coming into areas of high tension and trying to stir things up, cause emotions and tensions to flare, fan the flames of emotional rhetoric and hatred. And certainly Charlotte has been no different. And really have to tip your hat to Governor McCrory. He has sent in the National Guard, as we told you last week, Highway Patrol, and really done a good job of maintaining order. And it's really a shame when people from out of state come into situations and places that are already reeling from an incident and just stir things up. That's all they want to do is fan the flame. And so hopefully the flame in Charlotte will die down soon, and people will be able to go about their business without fear of rioting and physical violence. The Washington State, there was a shooting over the weekend, and details still coming out in that event, which the suspect killed five people in a mall. There's been some indication that there may have been some terrorism involved in that event. Well, over the weekend, Hillary Clinton announced that Mark Cuban, billionaire, would be on the front row on her side for the debate tonight. Did I say debate tonight? Absolutely. Probably going to be the most watched television debate in presidential history tonight. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. And so Hillary wanted to put Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, who is critical of Trump, right there on the front row in her section there. And so the Trump campaign responded by threatening to put Jennifer Flowers on the front row on his side. And so, of course, Flowers of Bill Clinton fame, I'll just put it that way. Of course, she claimed to have an affair with President Bill Clinton, and that certainly would have made for great television drama. However, Republican vice presidential candidate Mike Pence said Sunday that Flowers would not be on the front row. So, looks like we won't get any of that. We had a couple of tragedies over the weekend. Legendary golfer Arnold Palmer dying at age 87. Certainly Wake Forest University, one of the greatest golfers of all time, and certainly the face of the game through the 60s, 70s, 80s and really brought the sport to worldwide prominence. And then Jose Fernandez, 24-year-old pitcher for the Florida Marlins, died tragically in a boat accident. So we have a lot going on in North Carolina, but nothing bigger currently than tonight's presidential debate. And why does this matter in North Carolina? Well, as you know, our state has really, over the past three presidential cycles, this one included, become a real battleground, become a central focus for the outcome of the presidential election. We've seen both the Clintons and the Trumps in North Carolina repeatedly, if not daily, at least weekly. In fact, they were both coming to North Carolina this week. They have both since canceled their appearances in light of the goings-on in Charlotte, out of deference to that situation. And so, but tonight, all eyes will be on stage as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton really have their first one-on-one debate. They did have the Commander-in-Chief Forum, but they were not side-by-side. This, friends, should be very, very interesting, and I encourage you to stay up a little later and watch, because this will be historic. We've never had a campaign like this. We've never had a presidential election like this, and this is going to be one for the ages. The big question, and I've got two good guests on today, John Dinan of Wake Forest University, who we discovered just a couple of weeks ago, an outstanding political scientist. We'll be asking him for his thoughts prior to the debate tonight. And then Kay Daly, who has been in North Carolina politics for the last three decades, we'll be speaking with her tonight also about what to expect and her thoughts on the campaign. But tonight should be very, very interesting. The big question is, what will we see from Donald Trump? Will he be reserved, presidential, regarding of, the situation and low-key? Or will he be the Donald Trump that we all came to see debate after debate against the Republicans? Just brash, the showman, the center of attention. Will we see that Donald Trump? That should be very interesting. And if we see the latter, how will Hillary respond? You know, she's from the old school of politics, and so her debating, I'm sure she's been preparing, by the way, doing a lot more preparing, at least that we know about, than Donald Trump has over the last week or so. But how will she handle either Trump? How will she handle a reserved, forthright, intelligent, well-spoken Donald Trump? Or how will she handle a brash, rude, for lack of a better word, Donald Trump? Will he be able to rattle her? And I would love to be a fly on the wall in his campaign advisors meetings pre-debate and over the last week or so. So I'm sure some people are in his ear saying, you know, you've got to tone it down. You've got to be presidential. And by the way, since he's done that, his movement in the polls has been dramatic. And so the general electorate seems to be responding to that, whereas the primary voters responded to his, no-holds-barred approach. But I'm sure there are others who are saying, you know, Donald, let her have it. And so I'll be looking very closely tonight to see how this debate will pan out. Well, we've also got a great Mayor Monday guest for you, old friend Mayor Dick Sears from Holly Springs. And when he tells you how much they've grown, you will not believe it, because I had no idea. So thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina today. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at What Matters NC. You can hit me up at Mark Shiver. And I'll be back in just a few minutes to tell you a little bit more about what you can expect in tonight's presidential debate. Well, it's our pleasure once again to welcome to What Matters in North Carolina, Dr. John Dinan. He's a professor of political science at Wake Forest University. And Dr. Dinan, how are you today, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, big doings tonight, touted as probably the most watched presidential debate in history. I know that you're planning to watch. What are your thoughts and expectations going in to tonight's Trump-Clinton debate?
Well, I have all kinds of expectations. I guess the first expectation is that we know that if history is any guide, that the first debate is the one that will attract the most viewership and will have the most opportunity to actually shape the course of the election. It's not saying that the first debate always shapes the course or changes things, but of the debates that has the that have the most opportunity to kind of shift the course, that first one is where you're most likely to have people who tune in who haven't really been paying full attention to the campaign and are the most susceptible to changing their mind or taking an open mind and pushing them towards one of the candidates. And so we've seen in recent decades, sometimes a first debate has significantly narrowed a wide lead or has pushed one candidate ahead. As I say, not to say it necessarily happens at the end of tonight, but it's something I'll be looking for.
Dr. Dinan, obviously these people are surrounded, Clinton and Trump are surrounded with astute political minds, or at least one would believe that. So they know what you just said, that this is a very, very crucial hour and a half or so that they're going to be on television tonight. As they prepare, can you put us kind of inside the candidate's thought process? Do you think that they're really anxious or confident or nervous or all of the above from what you know of these two candidates?
Well, the word is that the two candidates and their campaigns have been approaching the debates in very different fashions. With the Clinton campaign approaching it more in a traditional fashion of really blocking out a significant amount of time for debate prep, having someone stand in as playing the opposing side. That's the word is, at least, that that's the way that the Clinton campaign has approached things. The word from the Trump campaign is that Trump has not really blocked out time from the campaign trail. He's been still quite active in the week before the first debate, and his approach has been, I've been through a number of debates in the Republican field, and I felt good about the way I did there, so I'm approaching it in perhaps a non-traditional fashion. And so I no reason to doubt these words that are coming out from the campaigns. That's what the word is right now.
Our guest, Dr. John Dinan of Wake Forest University, professor of political science. Do you expect the more reserved presidential Donald Trump or the brash showman that got him worked well for him in the Republican debates? And tangentially, if he is brash, will he run the risk, do you think, of being seen as being a bully to a female?
Yeah. Over the last month, and we can really trace this back to just about exactly a month ago, the Trump campaign changed in significant ways. Got new leadership, new campaign manager, and in the aftermath of that shakeup, there has been a very different Trump on the campaign. There's been a much more scripted Trump in his speeches. Not entirely. There's still opportunities to deviate from a script. Much more on message, as they say, and not extemporaneous comments. And so judging from the way that the Trump campaign and Trump himself have approached the last month, there's every reason to expect that that would be the focus of the campaign going into the debate. That is, have a message. Here's our key themes. Stress those key themes. Now, a debate by nature leads itself to extemporaneous comments. No one's up there with a teleprompter or a script. That being said, within the confines of the debate, there's still an expectation of staying on message and focus. That's what we've been led to think over the last 4 weeks, at least.
So in terms of Clinton, we know that she's had some challenges health-wise. Have you heard anything in the last little bit that would indicate that that might be an issue tonight? She's had been prone to coughing and that sort of thing. I'm sure she's probably eaten a lot of cough drops between now and tonight. But do you think her health will be able to be okay tonight?
Well, in the sense that when we think of how debates are assessed by viewers, and there's expected to be enormous viewership for the debate, it's not usually the case that the voters are assessing the candidates so much on what they say in terms of how they're responding to a question on tax rates or energy policy. But they're really judging him as much as anything on their demeanor, their appearance, their presentation, how they say what they say, how they appear as they're saying what they say. And so in that sense, I think there's every expectation that voters will be assessing both Clinton and also Trump in terms of demeanor, appearance, and presentation, and relatability, as much as, probably even more so than the content of what they say.
I can relate to you, Dr. Dinan, a very quick anecdote that goes along those lines. I remember right before Senator McCain and Barack Obama, Senator Obama, debated, there was an article that I read that said that Senator McCain could not use a computer because of injuries sustained while as a prisoner of war. And when he was sitting on a stool at one of the debates that they had, it was a couple of days after I read that article, and I hated that I thought this, but my very first thought was, is he going to be able to hold a microphone? Yeah. And so you're right. Appearance and demeanor and all of that stuff certainly plays a part. And I think that's certainly a little off topic. But, you know, the challenge that the Republican Party has had is putting forward a candidate that has a youthful and vibrant image. And in this case, that doesn't seem to be as much of an issue. Because Hillary Clinton is you know, she's not as young as a young Barack Obama was shooting 3-point basketball shots, and you know, Trump is certainly doesn't look to be in any way unhealthy. So I don't think that particular challenge will be before either one of them. But in terms of his bravado, it seems like it worked incredibly well with the primaries, but and he's drawn closer in the polls, and in some places, like here in North Carolina, some polls show that he has actually taken a lead. But the country as a whole hasn't seemed to have responded as well to that bravado, and he's had to tone things down a bit. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, there was every expectation. The standard way that campaigns work is that you win the nomination, you do what it takes to win the nomination, and then you make some subtle or even some more significant changes as you appeal to the general electorate. With the idea that there's different goals in mind. One is you have to win over a party, and usually party faithful in the primary season, but then you've got to appeal more towards the undecided, the voters in the middle in the general election. And so there's every expectation that we would see that with the Trump campaign, and we really didn't see that for the first month or month and a half after the Republican convention. What we saw with Trump before the convention in the primary season was pretty much the same thing we saw in terms of speeches, appearances, and approach in late July and throughout August. And then new campaign team, shakeup of approach, and then we started to see a different Trump. And so in that sense, it's the Trump that we've seen on the campaign trail and appearances for the last month is more in keeping with what we might have thought based on history. As you win the nomination one way, you know, you don't become a complete chameleon. You don't change things. The famous story was in the Romney campaign, as one Romney advisor said, it's kind of like an Etch-a-Sketch. He said you shake things up after the convention, and you move on to the general election. And some people responded badly to that. They say, well, that doesn't sound like a consistent campaign. So we're not saying that you change things completely, but by seeing Trump take a bit of a different approach in the last month after the approach he took in the primary, that's more what we'd expect based on history.
Well, we certainly will be watching. And one last question. I know that your time is at a premium, so I don't want to keep you too long. But one last question. The race is tight. Everybody would agree in that regard. But some of the races here in North Carolina also are in that tight category.
Yeah.
Do you see that as staying that way throughout from now until November, Dr. Don? Do you think a lot of this is just going to go down to the wire, both between Trump and Clinton and here in some of the big races in North Carolina?
I mean, certainly if we look at history in North Carolina, there's every reason to expect things to stay pretty tight. Certainly when looked at the last two presidential elections, they've been within a few percentage points in North Carolina. If you look at the history of the North Carolina U.S. Senate races. In the last 40 years, there's been only one Senate race where the candidate who won by double digits. That was Richard Burr's first re-election in 2010. Every single other U.S. Senate race in North Carolina in the last 40 years has been decided by single digits, but
wow.
This one. That's a sign that North Carolina Senate elections are historically competitive, even when you have incumbents. And the governor's race has the potential to also be razor thin. So if we look at history, if we look at how things have gone so far in the campaign, no reason to expect 2016 to be any different than previous years in North Carolina.
Well, we'll certainly look forward to it, and we'll look forward to getting your thoughts along the way. Dr. John Dinan of Wake Forest, thank you very much for being our guest once again on What Matters in North Carolina.
Good to be here.
Thank you, sir. One of our favorite segments every Monday is called Mayor Monday, where we go around the state and talk with different mayors and find out what's special about their towns. Joining us today on What Matters in North Carolina is Mayor Dick Sears of Holly Springs. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Well, I used to talk to you several years ago, and it's been a while. I'm glad to reconnect with you. And a lot has changed in the last several years. Particularly in a growing town like Holly Springs. How has the growth that has been all around you and part of your town, how has it affected Holly Springs?
Well, first of all, let me give you some numbers. In 1990, we were less than 1,000 citizens. Today, we're about 33,500.
Wow.
What that's done, that growth has paid for many, many improvements. In 1990, actually, when we moved here in 95, there were no doctors, one school, no dentists, very little shopping, and today that's all been taken care of. We've got a hospital on our way. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 schools now, including a high school that we didn't have for 45 years. So growth has been very good to us. And, of course, the downside is it's increasing traffic. However, talking to all the rest of the mayors in Wake County, that's a problem we all have, and we'd rather have that problem than the problem that no growth causes.
Well, absolutely, but that is incredible. I had no idea, Mayor Sears, that you had exploded like that. I live in eastern Wake County, and we've had our own brand of growth, but nothing like that. That has really been extraordinary. Do you think the folks that have been long-term residents of Holly Springs, do you think that they have, adapted well? Is it something that people have, come to you and complained about, or is everybody excited about the growth?
Well, I'd never say everybody's excited. There are some, but not many, who complain about the growth and what the growth does for traffic. But at the same time, when I explain to them that one of the things that we're trying to do here is to create a town where people don't have to leave unless they want to. And when we first moved here in 95, we didn't do anything in this town. We had to go to Cary or Raleigh to do our shopping and everything else. So I think the word is kind of getting out that traffic is the price you have to pay, but we're also throwing a lot of money against improving our traffic situation in Holly Springs. And we actually did a DOT study where 7 out of 10 cars that go through Holly Springs are from out of town.
How about that?
Now, that we can never fix that one anyway. But we're doing our best to make the traffic situation much more acceptable.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you, our guest on Mayor Monday, is Mayor Dick Sears of Holly Springs. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was some history in Holly Springs that, frankly, I did not know. But you've got quite the Civil War history there in Holly Springs.
We do, and one of the places that comes to my mind is the MIMS, that's M-I-M, possibly S House, where during the Civil War, part of Sherman's army camped in front of this particular place, and the story I get, which has been documented, is that one of the soldiers from the Union got a little too familiar with the lady who was living there by herself at that time, and she poured a hot cauldron of soup over him, and there's many people at that point, they thought, she's in big trouble. But the captain of the group, as I am told, came out to the troops and said, don't touch her, don't bother her anymore. She's a nice person, leave her alone. And they did, and they didn't burn down the MIMS house. And today, it's been renovated, and being used for various purposes in our town. So we have a great history. That's true. That's true. And we're very proud of that history. We're also very proud of the town that was here when it was only 1990. It was 1 square mile or less.
Wow. Well, that certainly is pretty amazing. I guess they figured they didn't want to get scalding hot soup poured on them if they missed.
I think, as I say, I've documented that story, so it's not just hearsay. But I think they got the message that this lady has got a lot of courage, and her husband was, of course, out at war at that point in time. And I think that that's a nice thing. That the men's house is just one beautiful home, and as I say, it needed to be reconstructed, if you will. And I remember David Price was down here several years back, probably 10, and we walked through the house, and he was in awe about how much it could be. And today, if he walked through again, he would see that the renovation has been pretty well complete. Not quite, but pretty well, and it's a beautiful home. It's right near Holly Springs Town Hall.
Now, Mayor Sears, I'm just reading some stuff online here, and after the Civil War, the town was fairly, well, it didn't fare too well, and I guess a gentleman named Alford, George Alford, was instrumental in getting the town incorporated in 1877, and as they say, the rest is history from there. But the railroad at that time, I had read, was fairly important. Is it still an important part of Holly Springs, or has those days gone by?
Historically, it's still important. Days have gone by. The railroad used to run right behind where Town Hall is now, and it is gone. There is no railroad in Holly Springs, and that will not be changed in the near future. Hopefully bus service to and from our neighboring towns and Raleigh and Cary, Apex, Fuquay, will take the place of that. But right now, the rail is gone.
So you mentioned Apex and Fuquay, and I would imagine that as a mayor, you have to interact and work with the other mayors and such from those towns. And it's not like, you know, you've got Knightdale and there's 6 or 7 miles and then Wendell and then there's a few more miles in Zebulon. But you guys have grown so much, particularly Holly Springs and Cary, and I know Fuquay is growing, that you're having to work closely together with one another. Have you found that to be something that you've been able to work with these other civic leaders in a positive way?
Absolutely, the answer is yes. The Wake County Mayor's Association, of which I'm the incoming president, and was the president in 2005.
Okay.
We are very much in tune with the term regionalism, and I have said on many occasions what happens in Raleigh has an effect on Holly Springs. Certainly, what happens in Fuquay and Apex, and even Cary, has an effect on Holly Springs, and we all believe that, and we all, believe it or not, work together. There's no animosity between any of the mayors, including all the mayors in Wake County, and that's a blessing to behold for the whole county, because we're still moving in about 64 people, I am told, 64 people a day in Wake County, so that's quite a challenge.
Yeah. You mentioned Raleigh, and our guest is Mayor Dick Sears of Holly Springs. Do you have a good working relationship with the folks in the General Assembly?
Absolutely, and we try to keep up with that. That's one of our main goals. We had a good relationship with Skip Stamm, who's now retiring. And, of course, one of the persons who's running for his slot, if you will, on the House is Linda Hunt-Williams, who happens to be one of our council members. So we hopefully will have even a better relationship, although it's been very good, and we also commend people like Senator Tamara Behringer, who's been a very good advocate for Holly Springs, and that has made a big, big difference. And she's an advocate for a lot of smaller towns along the way.
Well, one of the things I like to ask, Mr. Mayor, if
sure.
folks come to these various towns that we spotlight every week, if I come to Holly Springs, what's something that I need to be sure that I do before I leave?
Well, the one thing that we're doing, and it may not be completed but at that point in time, but it has been my and our goal to build a town which means you don't have to leave Holly Springs unless you want to. And I go back to the point of when we first moved here, there wasn't hardly any shopping. And I remember so many times having to go to Cary for groceries and places like that. So we're getting about there. By the time we have our movie theater open next month, yay.
Wow.
And by the time we build our hospital, which is a 50-bed approved hospital now, the certificate of need has now been completed for some time. That hospital should rise out of the ground someplace around 2018, and that will be a 50-bed, state-of-the-art hospital. Right now, we have an urgent care center for Rex, and that's been very busy also with pediatric and family practice and various other specialists and doctors. So that's been the big thing that we're trying to accomplish. I think we're about there. Having the Salamanders baseball team here at our North Main Athletic Complex has been another big event, and we have done a lot of things there, and we have artificial turf, soccer fields, and the baseball field both here and at Womble Park. And for those who don't know, that is a huge advantage because I have actually seen our Salamanders play in light rain, and it's very safe, and it drains very quickly, and the investment was significant, but we're glad we did it. We did it on a bond issue for Park and Rec.
Wow, that really sounds... sounds like something. I know that hospital, Mayor Sears, is really going to be something that the folks there in Holly Springs will be glad to have nearby and not have to, as you say, leave town. Certificate of need has come under a lot of controversy, but I know that you guys are glad that you have yours and are able to build that hospital for sure.
Well, Mark, I must say it took... And I'm not a big proponent of certificate of need. I could go on and on about that for the next hour and a half. But at the same time, we worked for over 10 long years to get that certificate of need, which is now hanging on my wall in my office. But at the same time, we're there now, and we're going to go on from there, and we'll have this hospital built, and it will be a very huge advantage for people who live in our area that won't have to be a bus, ambulance, or whatever, to the nearest hospital because it's going to be here. And a lot of the major support from that came from my good friend John Byrne, who's the mayor of Fuquay. So that in essence answers another question you brought up about how we get along together and it's the right way to do it.
Absolutely. Well, Mayor Sears, a couple more quick ones.
Sure.
How did you decide to get into municipal government? I know that not everybody is inclined to be a public servant. What was it that led you to throw your hat in the ring and decide that you'd like to serve as mayor of what has become one of the fastest growing towns in the state?
Well, there's kind of two answers here. The first answer is that I have a rather extensive marketing background with a company called Sears Roebuck and Company. The founder of Sears Roebuck was also named Richard Sears. Of course, he died many, many years ago. And one of our council members' wives found that out, and she said, why don't you run for mayor? And I said, I'm not interested. She says, I dare you. I'm just giving you a real factual account.
Mm.
And I said, no. She says, I double dare you. At that point in time, that's all I needed. I started knocking on doors, and after about a month of knocking on doors, I said, you know, this is something I want to do.
How about
I think
that?
I can make a difference, and hopefully I have.
Well, there's no question about that. You've been a mayor for quite some time in Holly Springs, and you've overseen phenomenal growth. Finally, by the way, I ran for town council back about 10 years ago where I live, and there's nothing like it. I think everybody ought to run for something at some point in their lives. But finally, what do you see as the next phase, the next big challenge? I mean, you're overseeing the growth. You mentioned the traffic. What do you envision for Holly Springs over the next couple of years?
Well, again, I think the traffic remains the number one opportunity. And DOT has been very helpful working with us to help contribute monies towards our project. I think that's probably still the primary goal of ours, is to help the traffic situation. After that, our water and sewer would remain a challenge, but it's not. We have water coming in from the Cape Fear River, and that's our own pipe. And then we also have our own water treatment plant, which is about 30% used, so that's all good.
Yeah.
And I think the challenges then would just just kind of boil down to maintaining growth and continuing to add commercial development to our town, which we're doing, and affordable housing and quite a few other things. So I think we're on the right track.
Well, it sounds like it. It sounds like you sure got a lot on your plate, but if anybody can handle it, I know it's you. Mayor Dick Sears, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being our guest here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day.
Yes, sir. You too. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina, it's our pleasure to welcome Kay Daly. She's got quite a resume. You might have remembered that she served as the communications director for the North Carolina Republican Party back during the Clinton administration. She's worked for five members of Congress, and she's our guest now. Kay, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure, and today is a big day, the big debate tonight, the first head-to-head debate between Republican candidate Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton, and I thought it would be good for our listeners to get your take here about, several hours away now, but coming up fast. How do you think this is going to go tonight?
Well, you know, we feel very good about where the campaign's at going into the debate. Mr. Trump has the right message. He's surging in the polls. He's getting great crowds and tremendous excitement, and everything's moving in the right direction. Right now, we're leading in key battleground states in places like Ohio and Florida, even in Colorado, according to new polling from this weekend. And of course, here in North Carolina, this is a battleground state. And new polls show that we're leading here. So the pressure here really is on Hillary Clinton. Not only did she raise the bar for herself by taking the last 4 days off the campaign trail for a cram session, but most people, including the NBC Online poll, that she said that she lost the commander-in-chief form 2 weeks ago. So she is really 0-1, and she can't afford to go 0-2, because that would be devastating for her at this point. So I think here tonight, Mr. Trump is going to continue to be himself. He's going to speak with the clarity and the conviction of someone who believes that he truly does have the best ideas to make America great again. And he's going to show that we've got to unleash our economy, bolster our national defense, make good trade deals, and stop illegal immigration. At his core, Mr. Trump is an agent of change, and Hillary Clinton, on the flip side, is running for that third Obama term. She wants to keep things just how they are, because she's profited pretty well from this rigged inside-the-beltway system. Just follow the money.
Well, that certainly was pretty in-depth analysis there. I want to break it down just a little bit, Kay. First of all, you've been part of North Carolina for a large part of your life. Suddenly, the state in the last several years has found itself in more of a prominent role in these presidential elections. What do you attribute that to? Why is North Carolina suddenly the state that everybody has to win?
Well, North Carolina has changed demographically, certainly. Most folks did not believe me when I said a couple of years ago, this is no longer the state of Jesse Helms. It's no longer this definitive red state that you can just take for granted anymore as a conservative, as a Republican. This is a state that is a battleground state now. You've got to fight for it if you are a conservative. This is why you see conservatives and Republicans coming into this state and fighting for it, and certainly the calendar has changed a great deal. We've got a lot of new voters in the state. You've got folks moving here from all over the country. Population changes. There are more people moving to North Carolina than ever before. This is a state to watch for a number of reasons. We are, closer to a deadline in which it matters more in terms of the calendar. So there are several reasons why North Carolina is important. There are more votes here that matter. So more and more presidential candidates put North Carolina on that checklist. Before, Republicans just assumed this was a state that they had in their hip pocket. That is no longer the case. And so Republicans have to fight for this state, tooth and nail, to make sure that they have it in their column. And it's going to continue to be that way until Republicans understand that a conservative message works, and it works every time. When you go back to your roots, when you understand that messages of a conservative nature work, and they always have and they always will, then we will win elections.
Our guest is Kay Daly, certainly no stranger to North Carolina and an active part of the Trump campaign, speaking in advance of the big debate tonight. And Kay, you said something in your first response I also wanted to go back to, about the Donald Trump that we will see tonight. There's been speculation as to whether or not he would be more reserved, more presidential, or, you know, if we will see the Donald Trump that we've seen in some previous debates where he is on the attack. How do you think that will play out tonight? Is it just anybody's guess, or can you let us in on what we can expect?
Well, you know, Hillary Clinton is one of those candidates that every time she speaks on behalf of the donors and the special interests. You know, every line she says is rehearsed and memorized and scripted. Nothing she says is off the cuff. Nothing is from the heart. It's never authentic or genuine. And Americans, well, they got a pretty good radar for things like that. You don't want to be the robotic professional politician, the status quo candidate, during a change election. This is why I think millions of Americans flocked to Donald Trump, because he was this candidate that came upon the scene and spoke from the heart. He was the guy who didn't have all these talking points, who didn't have strings and crowds of consultants around him, trying to blow dry him and you know, hitch him to a whole bunch of talking points and memorized lines and rehearsing him. You felt that what he said was straight from the cuff. And, you know, while folks said you can't do that, he went ahead and did it. You know, in 30 years of working in politics, I have never seen an election like this before in my life, ever.
I don't think any of us have,
all
Kay.
All the rules. I mean, every single one of them, I said, surely, you know, he can't do this and get away with it. He did it. He absolutely did it, and folks loved it. You know, the jig is up for Washington media, for inside the Beltway politicians, for folks who thought, you know, you can't do this. Here's a list of rules you got to follow. You got to be A, B, C, and D to win. Donald Trump has shown that what the people have been saying out here in the hinterlands, what they wanted, he reflects every single thing of what we've wanted out here. He speaks for us. Finally, we've got someone who says, you know what? We're tired of these special interests and donor class politicians who have rigged the system for years. What Hillary Clinton represents, and remember back in the 90s, she represented that rigged system. As soon as she moved in the front door, she started moving stuff out the back door as fast as she could, whether it was the Lincoln bedroom, the travel office scandal. All of those things started happening under her husband's administration, and she's going to continue that if she gets elected this year. Donald Trump is not going to be one of those status quo politicians. He's going to upturn the whole system and start over, and frankly, we need that more than ever now.
Our guest is Kay Daly, very passionate about this election. And Kay, one thing that it leaves me scratching my head, frankly, is that there seems to be still, I mean, the campaign between these two has been very close up to this point and still is. And there is a segment of the population that is not hearing the message that you just described, that is actually willing to go into a voting booth and vote for someone with all of the scandals and all of the questionable financial dealings and all of that, that there are people in this country still poised to go ahead and select her. And I don't understand that, frankly, as someone who tries to analyze the goings-on of the American voter, which is often hard to do. But what do you make of that?
Well, remember, we've got a generation of folks who have been indoctrinated from the very beginning, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's the media. They've gotten a message, a very cohesive leftist, liberal, progressive message, whether it's in schools, whether it's from Hollywood, that here's what you need to believe. And they've been indoctrinated that this is what you need to believe. Here's how you need to vote. And they've been handheld on these certain set of beliefs from the very beginning. And Hillary Clinton is the model for those beliefs. Now, the Clinton campaign is so worried about the strength of Donald Trump in this campaign that they're now using the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Politico as their own propaganda arm. And this is echoing. It's a whole echo chamber for this whole liberal progressive mantra that they've been using. You know, if you're a kid and you hear these progressive ideals in school every single day, and you've heard it since kindergarten, and it continues all the way through high school, and it continues through college, and now you're a voting age, and it continues. What you hear in Hollywood movies, and it's echoed throughout the media, and this is what you're supposed to believe, and now you're finally able to vote, and here you hear it echoed in the media, echo chamber, and propaganda arm. It's a hard thing to battle. When what do we have on the right? We've got what, talk radio? I mean, it is a it's an incredible spider arms worth of propaganda that the left has constructed over the years that we've got to battle tooth and nail. So it's going to take years for us on the right to try and combat all of what the left has constructed. We have got to be better on the right at getting our message out. But, you know, the people are really starting to understand what the media is saying out there is simply not true. It doesn't make sense to them anymore. When they realize that Democratic policies simply are not working, they know that something is not right in most of these Democratic-run cities. They can't put their finger on it a lot of times, but they just instinctively know that after years and years of failed policies, something is wrong. And we have an opportunity to get out there and talk with these folks one-on-one and put our policies in place, show them how conservative policies work. With Donald Trump, we have that opportunity, finally, at last. And this is the debate that folks have been waiting for years, years, watching these two titans of the left and of the right going at it, mano a mano. Tonight is the night. And forget Monday Night Football. This is the clash to watch.
Well, it certainly is. It's certainly...
We're going to have the left versus the right, agent of change versus status quo.
Well, it certainly is predicted to be the most most watched debate in history. Kay, one last thought, because I'd like to get your take on this, because you've been active in the conservative arena for so many years. There's still a group of people who call themselves conservative who are willing to not vote as opposed to voting for Donald Trump or voting for Hillary Clinton. And there seems to be some sense of principle, which I personally think is a little misguided, but it's neither here nor there. But I think every vote is important in this presidential election, whether you vote for Trump or you vote for Clinton. What would you say to people who are trying to take some type of stand by saying they're not going to vote for either candidate?
Oh, believe me, I understand that that sentiment very well. I've been very open about where I have stood during this entire election process. You know, I ran for Congress in this past election season in the 13th Congressional District of North Carolina, and I was one of the only candidates to come out for who I stood for, and that was Ted Cruz. And when my candidate was not the nominee, you know, I said, okay, I will come out and support my party's nominee. Now, you know, folks may disagree with me on this, but here's the underlying factor which folks have to consider. Whatever your issue is, one of my biggest issues over the past several years has been the court system. Any issue that you care about is going to end up at some point in the courts. And this is something that folks probably don't realize, but that lasts longer. A decision in the courts, in the federal courts, will last longer than any president, any congressional career, any Senate career. Any decision that comes down out of the courts is generationally important. And so we have to have a president in office who's going to put someone on the Supreme Court who is a constitutional conservative. It is critical that we have someone in there to do this, especially in this term. We've got folks in their 80s sitting on the court. This next president is going to probably put three, at the very least, Supreme Court justices on the court. That's going to last at least for the next two decades. That's going to have a lasting impact. I cannot stress the importance of this election any stronger than that. Whatever issue you care about, whatever amendment of the Constitution you care about, whatever issue in this nation you care about, it's going to end up in the courts one way or the other. If the left can't get it through Congress, they're going to get it to the courts. And by God, if you don't care about anything else, please vote for that reason.
Well, that's a strong, very sound encouragement and advice from our guest, Kay Daly. Kay, thank you. I know you will be watching the debate tonight very closely. I'm glad that we've had you on our program. I hope that you'll consider coming on again. We appreciate your candor, and thank you very much for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Kay Daly here on What Matters in North Carolina. She's a tad fired up about the debate tonight, as anyone involved in enjoying all things politics would be and is. And, of course, reminding you that we're not endorsing any candidate here on What Matters in North Carolina. We don't endorse political parties. We're just presenting opinion and people's viewpoints. Certainly we would welcome any Democrat to come on and share their thoughts as well, as we have done from the past, reporting from the Democrat National Convention a couple of months ago. Well, the polling has been really, really interesting. 74% of people polled by the Washington Post and ABC News are planning to watch the debate tonight. Of course, you never know if they just went around their office and did a poll, but I'm telling you, folks, this is going to be huge. The numbers tonight should be very, very huge. You've got a Monday night football game that's really not marquee. I think it's like New Orleans, Atlanta. So, you know, not a big national draw there, except for your hardcore football fans. But I'm telling you, this is going to be an enormous event. And can't help but thinking that both candidates are probably a little anxious right now, even though Trump portrays himself as being, you know, just massively confident. I bet he's got some butterflies, and certainly we know that that Hillary Clinton is probably a little anxious as well. Because I think that really Dr. Dinan, our first guest today, made a great point that these first debates carry so much weight. And as we will see, you know, if there's a clear winner, whoever it'll be, whether it's the Donald or Hillary tonight, the perception of whoever wins is going to to give them a huge bump in the polls. And so a lot riding on tonight's debate, and it's going to be interesting. I kind of hope we see, you know, the real deal with Donald, the debate Donald that we saw with the Republicans. I just don't know if that will play well with the American public on a broad basis. So, but it certainly would be entertaining, I can tell you that. Well, our hopes are that the folks in Charlotte will begin to come back to a state of, you know, whatever normalcy is for that metropolitan area. We know that the tragedy of someone losing their life is certainly something you just don't get over. But we also don't think that the people of Charlotte need, at least I don't think they need, outside agitators coming in to riot and destroy property and hurt people. And so hopefully order will be restored there, and whatever dialogue needs to take place anywhere in the country, whether it be Tulsa or Charlotte or any of these places, you know, certainly I don't think that dialogue is a bad thing, but rioting is not dialogue. And that does not change anything. That does not move the needle when it comes to affecting and influencing people in a positive way to your side of, you know, the page when you're trying to change people's opinion. Certainly it will attract attention, but it's not the kind of attention that, like I said, will affect real change. We haven't talked about Governor McCrory and Roy Cooper today over the weekend and earlier today. I noticed that Corning has made an announcement of expanding and adding some more jobs to the state. And some folks are also now taking another look at the performance of the North Carolina Crime Lab under the leadership or absentee leadership, as it were, of the current Attorney General, Roy Cooper. So, you know, these commercials that you see on TV, it's really just astounding. You know, that have you seen the sad teacher packing up her little car and driving off because she can't make it in North Carolina? Well, average teacher pay at $50,000 a year since the last budget was enacted. And, you know, that's usually for working about 10 months out of the year, plus healthy benefits and a healthy retirement plan. You know, and she appears to be single in this commercial. I don't know what they're trying to portray, whether she's married or not, but if she can't make it on $50,000 a year, I'm just not buying it. And really, you don't have to take my word for it. Go look at the Department of Public Instruction website and see how many teachers actually leave North Carolina because they're not making enough money. The number is minuscule, and it's just another attempt by the left to change the narrative by basically saying something that's not true. Yet it does make for a good television commercial. Everyone's heartstrings are pulled as the poor teacher has to go somewhere else. And even though there's nothing factual about the you know, that the commercial is based on. So anyway, it'll get worse. We'll see and hear more and more untruths the closer we get to Election Day. And we'll be glad to point that out for you as we go along. Well, thanks for listening. I'm excited about the debate. I hope that you are. I hope you have enjoyed our guests. And we'll break it all down for you tomorrow. And we'll look forward to talking to you then on another edition of What Matters in North Carolina.